the saying goes, opposites attract. Hugo von Hofmannsthal and Richard Strauss were wildly different personalities, and no one could have predicted that their artistic partnership would be a match made in operatic heaven. But so it proved. In 23 years, they produced 6 operas, including their greatest popular success. That was Der Rosenkavalier, with Hofmannsthal's text brilliantly blending hilarity and heart, set to Strauss's music, with its breathtaking lyrical beauty and exhilarating energy. Hello, I'm Roger Pines, dramaturg at Lyric Opera of Chicago. It's my pleasure to speak to you about Der Rosenkavalier. I'll be playing excerpts from a performance in EMI's Great Recordings of the Century series, with Christa Ludwig as Octavian, the Rose Cavalier of the title, Elisabeth Schwarzkopf as the Marshalin, Teresa Stitch Randall as Sophie, Otto Edelmann as Baron Ox, and other major artists in the supporting roles, including Nikolai Jeda, Eberhard Wächter, Ljuba Velich, and Gerhard Unger. The Philharmonia Orchestra is conducted by Herbert von Karajan. Strauss came to Rosenkavalier after producing 2 masterpieces of harrowing music drama, Salome in 1905 and Elektra in 1908. Elektra was his first venture with Hofmannsthal, an extraordinarily gifted poet, playwright, and essayist. Strauss realized that here could well be his ideal collaborator for opera. At this point, Strauss, in his mid-40s, a decade older than Hofmannsthal, had entered the prime of his long life, and he was at his creative peak. His character today we'd probably describe as laid back. He was also a wonderfully genial person, although at the same time he was confident in his own abilities as a musician. Hofmannsthal was a total contrast, earnest, ultra-sensitive, prone to depression and self-doubt. The two of them generally addressed each other formally in their letters, Dear Dr. Strauss, Dear Herr von Hofmannsthal. It was never by first name, but their mutual respect was enormous. Although they only occasionally would meet in person, during all their years of working together, they communicated constantly and in great detail through their letters. They remained united in their inability to rest until a peace was shaped to their mutual satisfaction. After Salome and Elektra, Strauss welcomed the chance to work on a comedy. He was entranced when Hofmannsthal explained in a letter the full and entirely original scenario for an opera full of burlesque situations and characters with lively action. He imagined what he described as 2 big parts, one for baritone and another for a graceful girl dressed up as a man. Period. Old Vienna under Empress Maria Theresa. And that's what we have in Der Rosenkavalier. Count Octavian Rofrano is 17 years old. He loves a woman who's nearly twice his age, his cousin, the Marshalin. She's a princess married to Field Marshal von Werdenberg. Strauss and Hofmannsthal meant her to be no more than about 32, but she's already feeling apprehensive about the passage of time. She convinces herself that her lover will soon leave her for a younger woman. She suggests him for a rather special task that only a handsome young man can fulfill, delivering the traditional silver rose to a young girl who's engaged to be married. In this case, it's Sophie von Faninal. Her nouveau riche father has arranged for her to marry Baron Ox, the Marshalin's boorish country cousin. Sophie and her rose cavalier fall in love at first sight. When Sophie meets the Baron, she's totally alienated by his vulgar behavior. Through an elaborate scheme, Octavian makes certain that Ox is caught in a compromising situation, witnessed by Sophie and her father. The Marshalin forces Ox to give up his claim on Sophie and yields Octavian to the girl he now adores. Strauss eagerly awaited each portion of the Rosenkavalier libretto. When Act I arrived in the spring of 1909, he was over the moon. He wrote to Hofmannsthal, "It really is charming beyond all measure." For the next several months, they exchanged many letters about their new opera, with Strauss making tactful but firm suggestions. Whenever I read their correspondence, I feel caught up in their enthusiasm for the collaboration itself. to the point where I'm practically shouting for joy whenever any tricky disagreement between the two of them is finally resolved. During the work on Rosenkavalier, Hoffmann's style is generally deferential. You feel that whenever he confesses to some dismay about a change proposed by Strauss, he's torturing himself emotionally as he does so. When Strauss gave a criticism, he always did it as if he were cheering Hoffmannsthal on, encouraging him to make a particular passage even better. Some of Strauss's queries and requests involved major rethinking of a full scene, but the result was always an improvement, especially when it came to the characters of Octavian and Baron Ox. After the Baron's arrival at Faninal's home, about 15 minutes into Act Two, the way the rest of the act proceeds is entirely due to a letter Strauss sent to Hoffmannsthal laying out some very important changes. Strauss made a point of ending the letter by saying, "Well now, I hope you won't be angry with me, but I feel that, as it now stands, I can't do anything with the second act. It's too much at one level. I must have a great dramatic construction if I want to keep myself interested for so long in a particular setting." He was never hurtful or nasty about anything he asked Hoffmannsthal to do. Fortunately, Hoffmannsthal could live with the revisions, and it all worked out. The Baron is officially Baron Ox auf Lerchenau, and at first Strauss and Hoffmannsthal were going to call the opera Ox auf Lerchenau, which literally means Ox in the Lark Meadow. Not at all an inappropriate title if we're talking about the Baron, but it's Octavian who's on stage for easily three-fourths of this opera. That's by some distance more stage time than any other character gets. And it's the Marschallin's suggestion that he be the Rose Cavalier that sets the events of the rest of the opera in motion. Der Rosenkavalier really was the best possible title. Preparations for the opera's 1911 world premiere in Dresden were not without tension. Strauss and Hoffmannsthal were never happy with Karl Perron, their Baron Ox. He lacked what Hoffmannsthal called the buffo quality, those Falstaffian, self-satisfied, ludicrous touches that were so important to the character. It was clear that Dresden's house stage director, Georg Thaler, was way too old-fashioned to bring this comedy fully to life. The creators both knew that something had to be done, and quickly. Fortunately, Max Reinhardt, who at 38 years old had already established himself as the most imaginative theater director in the German-speaking world, was brought in as something of a show doctor. Thaler was the credited director, but it was definitely Reinhardt's work that led to success. The first night audience went nuts over Der Rosenkavalier. The opera did not invariably triumph with every critic, but the public proceeded to embrace it in 17 major European houses during 1911 alone. It immediately attracted the interest of important singers, who relished the chance to bring their dramatic ability and vocal beauty to the principal roles. Today we think of the title role of Octavian, the Rose Cavalier, as a mezzo-soprano, and the mezzo in the excerpts I'm playing for you, Christa Ludwig, was a truly great Octavian. But the first person to sing the role, Eva von der Osten, was a soprano. That's the vocal category that Strauss actually indicated in the score. In the premiere, Strauss was hearing the music sung by someone who was also successful as such soprano heroines as Elsa in Lohengrin and Tatiana in Eugene Onegin. When we see photos, we can conclude that Madame von der Osten owed her engagement as Octavian not only to her voice, but also to her fine appearance in trousers. Lotte Lehmann, one of the greatest of all Marschallins, wrote that she'd often been asked why Strauss wrote Octavian for a woman and not a man. Knowing Strauss well, she didn't hesitate to inquire about this, a question that still preoccupies a lot of audience members today. In a response that Madame Lehmann considered very typical of Strauss, he gave her two reasons, one artistic and one practical. He was, first of all, intrigued by the idea of writing for three soprano voices. He was married to a soprano, and he was devoted to that vocal category for his entire career. The practical reason was, who can find an exceptionally handsome tenor who looks 17 and yet is mature enough to sing and act this very challenging role? Strauss joked that even if such a man does exist, We could only perform Rosenkavalier in that one town where this tenor lives. But today, all we need to do is hear the final trio for the Marschallin, Octavian, and Sophie to know how right Strauss was in his decision. At the start of the opera, after a night of love with the Marschallin, Octavian is overwhelmed with ecstasy, and we hear it in the breadth, beauty, and sheer soulfulness of the first lines he sings. But Octavian is also the epitome of impetuous youth. I once had the chance to discuss the role with the American mezzo-soprano Susan Graham, one of the most celebrated Octavians of her generation. And she told me, "In the bedroom, I like to play him like a Labrador retriever puppy. Labrador's feet are slightly too big, and they're very energetic and loving. They frolic. Octavian is so overwhelmed with joy and can't believe his good luck. This beautiful woman in bed with him, and he's 17. It's like he just won the lottery." In Octavian's three breathtakingly beautiful duets with Sophie, what Hofmannsthal wanted to avoid was what he described to Strauss as these two young creatures who have nothing of the Valkyries or Tristan about them, bursting into a Wagnerian kind of erotic screaming. Of course, Octavian and Sophie have to blend perfectly, as we hear in one of this opera's greatest highlights, and probably the most beloved music for two women in the whole operatic repertoire, the Presentation of the Rose. Strauss and Hofmannsthal also give us the humorous side of Octavian. Early in the opera, to avoid being discovered in the Marschallin's bedroom, he disguises himself as her maid Mariandel. And in that disguise, he encounters Ox, who's instantly smitten. Later, Octavian writes a letter to Ox from Mariandel, asking for a rendezvous. In the last of the opera's three acts, the two of them meet at a seedy inn. In that scene, when Ox is trying to ply Mariandel with drink, it's fun to see how the singer playing Octavian / Mariandel handles the wrong side of the tracks Viennese accent appropriate for the chambermaid. In her first line, she's declaring, "No, no, I don't drink wine." Nein, 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 ich bleib nicht da. Despite the opera's title, Hofmannsthal felt that for the audience, the Marschallin would be the opera's central figure and the person they'd care the most about. He wrote to Strauss saying that women in particular would look upon the whole vivid unfolding of the action from the Marschallin's point of view. Now, she's not always a sympathetic figure. Certainly, she isn't all that kind in her treatment of Octavian in Act I when she's forcing him to leave her over his strenuous objections. Still, she reaches an audience's innermost depths when she talks uneasily about the passing of time. It's a very intimate, inward-looking speech to Octavian in Act I. She's trying to explain her feelings to a 17-year-old who just can't understand what she's going through. Time is a strange thing, she says. When one lives heedlessly, time means nothing. But then suddenly one is aware of nothing else. The Marschallin faces the future with one moist eye and one dry eye, so to speak. She proves it at the end of Act I. Taking the box containing the silver rose, she gives it to her servant and says, "Deliver it to Count Octavian and say, the silver rose is inside." The Count knows anyway. That rise to a long-held pianissimo gives us one of the most poignant, heart-melting phrases in all opera. Like Sophie, the Marschallin was a convent-bred girl who submitted to an arranged marriage. Sophie is herself a perky teenager, totally innocent, and initially thrilled with the idea of marriage, at least before she meets the Baron. Strauss and Hofmannsthal let the character show her liveliness and her genuine sweetness when she's making small talk with Octavian. "I know how old you are, 17 years and 2 months, and I know all your baptismal names." She rattles off all six of them, and she even knows that his nickname is Cancan. When Sophie meets Ox, and he treats her as if he were examining a prize horse, she's beside herself with misery. There's a wonderful moment of ensemble that simultaneously has Ox ogling Sophie, her duenna Mariana praising him, Octavian being increasingly disgusted by Ox, and Sophie herself totally outraged, before Strauss accentuates the text by having Sophie deliver her last line a cappella. "Never has any man spoken to me like this before. I like to know what you imagine of me and of yourself. What are you to me?"
"Und mit mich schmuckt der Rei und Zärtlichkeit, nicht halb so glücklich machen meiner Sein.
Was ich
sie wird es tun, ob sie daran ihr denkt oder nicht.
Ich will nicht wissen, was im Dunkeln mir und dem.
Although Ochs is often played as a man well into middle age, Strauss and Hofmannsthal didn't want him to be more than 35. With all his antics, basses have a chance for a more rip-roaring time on stage than in probably all their other roles combined. Like every role in Der Rosenkavalier, the text counts for so much in Ochs's music. Beginning with the conversational passages that introduce him in Act One, he's actually on his best behavior when he comes to pay the Marschallin a visit to tell her about his impending marriage to Sophie. Otto Edelmann, who was his generation's most famous Baron Ochs, always had a distinct advantage in this opera. He was Viennese by birth, so authenticity in the dialect came to him naturally. If a singer is going to manage Ochs's music, he needs an easy 2.5 octaves. To give you an idea of the extremes of that huge range, here are two moments from the end of Act Two. Ochs has received the letter from Mariandel, and he's beside himself with anticipation, as we hear on a sustained top F. Ochs dances around Faninal's home ecstatically, thinking about Mariandel and singing his favorite song, a waltz tune that's become nearly as celebrated as any by Vienna's waltz king, the other Strauss, Johann Jr. The waltz sung by Ochs ends with the words, mit mir, keine Nacht dir zu lang. With me, no night for you is ever too long. And Strauss, at the end, asks Ochs to sustain a subterranean low E natural. In the bustle that opens Act Two, with the Faninal household preparing for the arrival of the Rose Cavalier, within the first 2 minutes, we hear three members of the Faninal household: Sophie's social-climbing father, an expansive full-voiced baritone, very excited at this moment, his daughter's duenna Mariana, a role meant for a high-ranged but mature soprano, who here is chattering away to Sophie as she looks out the window describing Octavian's arrival, and Faninal's fussy, take charge, Major Domo, a light but penetrating tenor. There are other wonderful smaller roles, including one that has always appealed to star tenors. The character sings barely 5 minutes of music, but the melody that Strauss has given him really soars. The role is identified simply as a singer. He He appears during the Marschlands' so-called levée in Act One, a daily ritual where she receives a whole slew of people who are asking favors of her. An introduction played by an onstage flautist precedes the singer, who steps forward to launch into a lushly romantic and sentimental Italian aria. As you've already heard, Strauss's orchestration in Der Rosenkavalier is both sumptuous and exquisitely intimate. The composer's relish in the vocal writing is evident just about everywhere. Above all, and thanks to Hofmannsthal, Strauss had the special gift of a trio who together enabled him to thoroughly consummate his lifelong love affair with the soprano voice. For that, opera lovers have been grateful for more than a century. The recording excerpted in this commentary is used courtesy of Warner Classics. Thank you for listening.